If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at tntradio.live. This is the Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
G'day, g'day. Welcome to the program. This is the Australian edition of TNT Radio. My name is Chris Smith. We are live to the world, as you probably know, if you're a regular viewer or listener to TNT. We're even beyond the world, depending on internet access in space. This is, of course, the new way of obtaining your news, your information, your commentary, your independent views. This is where it is. Throw away your old transistors, your radios. That is legacy media. We're not interested, and I'm sure most of you are not interested either. The legacy media in the United States and the United Kingdom is quickly being basically taken over by the likes of TNT Radio and others that can broadcast all the information and commentary independently and without bias. This is the place to get your information, right here. So throw away those old broadcasting methods. We are live 24/7. And of course, just by pressing watch live on our app or our website, you can actually watch what we do right here. And of course, on other hundreds of streaming, video streaming platforms right across the internet. That is how we roll at TNT Radio. In this edition, I will get you a full comprehensive summary of what has happened in the suburb of Wakeley in southwestern Sydney last night, a little place near a town that many in Sydney would be more familiar with, that is Fairfield, and it is a place that has hit international headlines. We have literally seen on video a terror attack, the latest terror attack to occur in the world. And then an inexplicable violent attack on police and about 20 police vehicles as well by the very churchgoers who police had turned up to support. Bizarre, but maybe not as bizarre as I'm about to explain to you. It is ghastly stuff, but do you not think that this is happening elsewhere? Do you not think that with 200 different cultures in a city like Sydney, that these kinds of hatreds, this kind of extremism, are you saying that that doesn't go on, that this is a one-off? I doubt whether you have actually grown up in the southwestern part of Sydney, as I have, because I'm telling you right now, as soon as 200 cultures got together about 25 to 30 years ago, it started. Old hatreds came to Sydney and they exist to this day, which is why you saw what you saw on video last night. I was speaking with a terrorism expert, Shane Healy, right off the top of the program shortly. Independent New South Wales MP Mark Latham, who of course likes to call spades dirty big shovels, will join us this hour as well with his insight into last night's chaos at Wakeley. There are some comments made by one particular federal MP that I find just inexplicable, and I know Mark does as well, and he will be having his say on those comments and what occurred last night. We'll discuss the lessons too from last weekend's Bondi Junction stabbing massacre and the testimony from the Woolworths boss today, which drove a panel of senators absolutely nuts. I will play you the video clip and you can decide whether the outgoing Woolworths chief, Brad Baducci, is telling the truth or not. And can Israel refrain from igniting another war in the Middle East on another boundary? All of that with Mark Latham very, very shortly on the show. Also on the program, while our attention has been focused on wars in the Middle East, wars in Eastern Europe, what is China up to? And what's been going on in the Indo-Pacific? And what impact has China's manoeuvres of late had on island nations? Well, Asian expert Andrew Phelan will unpack some very strategic moves in the region very, very shortly on the show. Plus, is it time to allow women to carry and use pepper spray in public to protect themselves? Fair question. That is certainly the question I want to put to Di McDonald on the show. She is a stalking victim. Her story has been highlighted on the ABC. She's also a campaigner for women's safety, as you'd imagine. I think it is fair and reasonable that we have this discussion in this country right now, especially after 18 terrible months where we've had a record number of women violently killed or maimed at the hands of men. We have had statistics that are horrendous, and we've got to do something about it. And maybe the simple thing is to allow women to carry in their purse, their bag, pepper spray. And I'd love to know what you think about that. I will ask that question too in our Wednesday For My Say survey question. We do this each and every week on a Wednesday. And Wednesday's question tomorrow will be about pepper spray being legislated as permissible to be held by women in a public place. And then the question has to be asked, given the debate about what constitutes a woman, will that include transgender women, biological men as well? It's only a side issue, but it is something that will be raised. You can bet on it. And if you want to have your say, as in right now, there is no ceiling on opinion, spit it out. Have your say. Don't allow someone else to speak up. Don't write it down. You don't have to post it. You can actually verbally express your views right here and your objections to what you're hearing. Bring it on. Come and be part of the program at any stage. You can dial in from the United States or Canada on 1-888-201-6425, from the UK on 033-0024-1026, and from Australia or New Zealand, the number's 1-800-670-310. I'll tell you those numbers throughout the program, but I would suggest that you write them down somewhere. Put them in your phone, even better. Put them in your contacts, because at one stage or another, you will see this program and you will want to have your say, whether it's today or whether it's another day. You will want your say, and you'll think to yourself, what's that number again? Put it in your phone, store it up, and you can use it at your will. Let's get on with this. This is Chris Smith, broadcasting live on the Global News Talk Network. This is TNT.
The facts, no spin or agenda.
Not enough with the lies, we need the facts.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, welcome to Australia, a place where imported Islamic extremism is alive and well. One bishop and one priest in a place of prayer, mind you, stabbed by a mad 16-year-old yelling, God is great, in Arabic. That is an act of terrorism.
In a moment, the New South Wales Police Commissioner will speak about this investigation and her decision at 1:35 a.m. to determine that this was a terrorist act and investigation.
Welcome to Australia, where an imported community then violently and inexplicably turns on police who come to their assistance.
Can I say that we understand the distress and concerns that are there in the community, particularly after the tragic event at Bondi Junction on Saturday. But it is not acceptable to impede and injure police doing their duty or to damage police vehicles in a way that we saw last night. People should not take the law into their own hands, but should allow our police and our security agencies to do their job.
Welcome to Australia, where our politicians keep telling us how successful multiculturalism is here. What is wrong with those facts? Well, let me tell you, do not let anyone tell you that Australia is a healthy, successful example of multiculturalism. It is not. And that's not just because of what's happened last night at Wakeley in Sydney's southwestern regional melting pot for 200 different nationalities. It's because most of these animosities, these religious wars, these community hatreds and foreign standoffs, they play out privately every day. There are communities that don't have anything to do with other communities. There are Croats who have nothing to do with Serbs and vice versa. there are Assyrians who would not have anything to do with, for instance, those within their region who they fought against in the last 50 years. They have taken their old hatreds, their old animosities, and transplanted them right here in Australia. And I speak from experience here because I grew up near the suburb of Wakeley and have watched very carefully how the arrival of various foreign groups has just transplanted hatreds and battles from wars abroad into our suburbs. It doesn't happen for everyone. That's obvious. There are successful assimilations, and some wonderful people have come from other parts of the world and assimilated fine and have left all those old historic battles behind, but not all of them. This Assyrian community, I might add, has form for turning on police. 27 years ago, Constable David Carty died after being attacked in the car park of the Cambridge Tavern Fairfield by a group of Assyrian gang members. He was stabbed in the chest. He was kicked on the ground. He was punched. He was stomped on. And then he was scalped in a totally unprovoked attack. That hatred towards authority obviously remains to this very day. How else do you explain why, after this stabbing last night, the Assyrian churchgoers would grab bricks, concrete, timber palings and bottles to smash police officers, the individuals involved, and then destroy 10 of their vehicles and causing damage to another 10? How do you explain that? Some of the officers who came to help that Assyrian community, they are still in hospital today. One has a broken jaw.
Those that were involved in that riot can expect a knock at the door. It might not be today, it might not be tomorrow, but we will find you and we will come and arrest you.
Let's hope the New South Wales Police Commissioner carries through with that threat, because the rest of us cannot stand what we witnessed last night in Wakeley. We cannot stand what we saw. Firstly, how dare people who call themselves Australians carry out an act of terror like that in a church of prayer? Has it come from their parents? Has it come from their mentors? Has it come out of their local mosque? Or is it just on the internet? Now, if this kid is mentally deranged, and let's establish that first, well, he needs treatment, professional treatment, urgently. I get that. I understand that. But otherwise, we need to punish him. We need to punish the act. We need to tell anyone who harbours these primitive and stupid threats and views and hatreds that it will never be accepted in this country. Why can't they take their extremism to where extremism is commonplace? Take it back to the Middle East, where it belongs, where it goes on every single day, not in a peace-loving, free and democratic country like Australia. And as for the Assyrian community, those in the police force have not forgotten what members of their community did to that young man, David Carty, who grew up in the town of Parkes and who came to Sydney to join the police force and was committed to protecting the society that those same people are very lucky to be living in. How dare they? How dare any Australian turn on police the way they did last night? It is the kind of thing you see in a third world civil war stricken territory where police are considered as bad as the criminals. They are as corrupt as the criminals. It's not Somalia. It's not Syria. It's not Iraq. It's Australia. Let's hope every person who carried out this frightening violence last night get their decade or so locked up in a prison cell, and I'll be happy to throw away the key. But if you think that these suburban hatreds, these religious extremist views, and these conflicts between nationalities don't exist in other areas of our main multicultural cities, you are not paying attention. You simply are not paying attention. You must live in some very cozy parts of the country, because it's happening in Sydney, it's happening in Melbourne. It's a major issue that we all need to do our bit to eradicate, even if that means to get really, really tough. This is TNT Radio.
TNT's James Freeman.
According to reports in the press, Ian had liked posts from BNP, that's the British National Party leader Nick Griffin, and posts from Tommy Robinson, which included a photo of a pig on a spit that suggested holding hog roasts outside of mosques during Ramadan. whilst another included a video of the Quran being burned in the streets of the Netherlands. Now, whatever your views are about Islam, I don't think it's a great look to be engaging with this type of content if you are serious about becoming a member of parliament. Not given that, you know, if you're successful in that role and you get elected, then you're elected to represent all of the constituents in your area. And regardless of where you live, that will include people from the Muslim community.
James Freeman on today's News Talk TNT.
In a democracy, the majority vote rules. But in most democracies, you can only vote for change every 3 or 4 years. To understand what people want, governments and political parties use focus groups. These focus groups can include as little as 20 people. Australia is a country of over 25 million people. Does making decisions based on 20 people sound fair to you? Have your say. Be heard in between elections. Download the For My Say app now. That is number 4, My Say.
If you're talking about it, we're talking about it. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I noticed that Lou on our chat box has had something to say about my opening comments on what occurred at Wakeley. And Lou, who's obviously a gross ignoramus, says, I've got no idea. I've got to stick to my nuclear BS. If I've got no idea, Lou, you are brainless. I don't know how many times you've been to Wakeley, but I've been there about 60, 70 times. I've got friends who live there today. I go there regularly. I understand who the Assyrian community is. I know what they did to David Carty. Have you been out there, Lou? I bet you haven't. I bet you live in a cozy place somewhere. Button it up. Now, plenty of other comments coming in saying and agreeing with what I'm saying. Should not happen in this country, and we've got to wipe it out. Having said all of that, I want to go to Glenn the truckie, who's on our talkback lines right now. Glenn, go right ahead.
Hey, mate. I just see this as a direct result of the government's policy on since October 7th, mate. I'm sorry, but the government's got to be held accountable for this. We've allowed imams to preach in front of 7- and 8-year-olds for jihad and calling for murders here in Australia.
Well, we've allowed imams to ignite hatred between groups in our city, and without any punishment or correction. We do bloody well nothing when this sort of stuff goes on.
And that's because Albanese and his mates want their vote. Same as Biden's gone easy on Israel because he wants the Muslim vote. Same as Rishi Sunak in England wants the Muslim vote. It's a problem. As you said, we've imported ourselves. Why did they turn on the police? Now, I don't condone what happened to the police, but it could it be that we've seen a double standard from our police. They're quick to bring out the riot gear against peaceful Australians protesting for their freedoms, but they won't do anything to the Muslims. Could it be the Assyrians just believe there'd be another cover-up since October the 7th?
I think you might be giving them a little bit too much credit. I doubt whether that went through their mind. I think they think this is based on old hatreds for police that existed and what they stood for back in Syria. And they've taken that generation over generation and treated the police accordingly.
Yes, but they've also acted in the same way here in Australia, Chris. I support the police. But you've got to start from a basis of truth. The police didn't hold back with their violence during COVID, did they? Chris?
I'm hearing you. You've just dropped out on me. Glenn. I've got your back. Go ahead.
I was just saying, I support the police. We need the police. But the police didn't hold back from the violence they dished out on the Australian public during COVID. Yeah. And then we see imams and the carry-on from the Muslim society here in Australia, and the police do nothing.
So we make our own bed for these scenarios, and we allow, therefore, for them to have influence over young kids, whether it's 16-year-olds or 13-year-olds, and then it gets away from us. And this is the result of what occurred last night. Glenn, I've got to get to Shane Healy. He's waiting online, but thank you very much for your call. I appreciate your comments on the program. Let's talk about this latest act of terror and the subsequent violent attack against police, which is inexplicable. Shane Healy has worked in the Australian Army as an intelligence officer and trainer. In Australia, he was part of the Tactical Assault Group, where he was involved in several real-time terrorist incidents. Shane Healy, welcome back to TNT.
Good afternoon, Chris. How are you on this day?
I'm very well, mate. Thank you very much. I'm still gobsmacked by what I witnessed last night, and it was all on tape, which is a reflection of how things are done nowadays. Is it obvious to you that this is an act of terror after the two clergy were stabbed the way they were last night?
So it's not obvious, but given my knowledge of the Australian terrorism law, yes, because under the definition of terrorism in Australia, it's got to have a religious cause. So we ticked that box. There was serious harm to the people in the church, tick. And it was of a ideological nature. So as far as a legal perspective, 100%, but we don't know, and I haven't interviewed this teenager yet, but law enforcement would have, and they would have a greater understanding of his motivation, which is the key to this, I reckon, mate.
Yeah, I made the point at the start of the program. If the young bloke is mentally deranged, he's been somehow twisted by some terrible events that have gone on in his life, and you've got to keep those possibilities engaged. You've got to consider those, and no doubt police will try and get to the bottom of that with his parents. So we've got to understand it a little bit more, but this sounds like it's premeditated. He was yelling, "Allah Akbar," we know what that means. He didn't seem as if he was concerned that all of a sudden he'd stabbed two people. He was seen smirking and smiling when he was being arrested. It's not the kind of thing we appreciate in this country, is it?
No. And you know, it's not the first time. And if we look at the quote-unquote height of this in 2014-15, you know, I was my role was the intelligence analyst at New South Wales Youth Justice. And you know, I had 30 young juvenile offenders under my care that, you know, eight of them were charged with serious terrorism offences. So it's not the first time that New South Wales has had this. You know, in 2016, we had the ISIS Khan issue where he was had schizophrenia. He was a Sunni Muslim. He had an episode. He grabbed a kitchen knife and walked into a house and started stabbing some ladies. You know, then in 2019, we had the Mert Ney incident, where, you know, he stabbed a sex worker. Then he was in Wynyard, remember? That was all caught. And he was saying Allah Akbar, and the police didn't charge him with terrorism offences. So there's a little bit, you've got to know the motivation, you know, unless you've conducted interviews and know what's going on behind the crimes. It's hard to guess or make any positive assessment from the sidelines.
All right. I don't know what I'm more shocked about, that particular double attack, that stabbing attack in the name of Allah, or the inexplicable attack on police by the church group that police arrived to protect. What's your understanding of what went on?
So I was talking to messaging people that were out there last night in the Syrian community and the Lebanese Christian community who went out there to try to calm it down. This is generational hatred. This is very community against community that started in the Levant 100 years ago. So it's not something that's spurned up overnight. It is something that would happen again tomorrow if those communities felt threatened or attacked by the other community. These communities started many years ago as refugees out of Lebanon, out of Syria, out of Iraq, and they've brought that ingrained bias and hatred for the other part of those, you know, whether it be Sunni Muslims, Shia Muslims, Christians, Assyrians, brought that into Australia. And this is the core problem that we've had for 20, 30 years in Western Sydney.
And it's interesting that you say 30 years because, as I mentioned, 27 years ago, a group of Assyrians turned on young David Carty at the Cambridge Tavern Hotel and scalped him.
Yeah. Some people might remember that there was a crime gang, the Assyrian Kings, and they were the top of the food chain back in those days. They were more violent. more ruthless than the other gangs. Then you had the Tilopia Street Boys and some other of those Middle East gangs, and that's what started the MEOC organisation within New South Wales Police. So there's always been this inner community fighting, and it stems back from the civil war in Lebanon.
Okay, one last comment. Di Lee, the local federal member for Fowler, this is her territory, her stomping ground. She's worried that police called it when they did at 1:30 in the morning, a terrorist attack, because she's saying that it could ignite other incidents. What do you think of that?
So I think one thing that people might not know is this juvenile offender was charged with a serious offence at the end of last year before the juvenile courts and was given bail. So he was known to police. So the police would already have a record of not only his offending, but they would have had some psychological and background checks. So he wasn't not known to them. So when he was charged, and I know this for a fact, last night, that's why they were so quick to make some pretty concrete statements. Whereas if you go back to Bondi, they were very much where in the, you know, the 6 o'clock police update was, we're in the investigation phase now. We're going to wait to see where the information takes us. Whereas the reason they were more sure last night is because this was this attacker had already committed a violent offence at the end of last year. So they kind of, they knew who this boy was, and they knew a bit about his motivation. So I get why they made that call. Plus, what it does do, it gives the police additional powers as part of their investigation, and it brings in the Joint Counterterrorism Team. Now, that's made up of the Australian Federal Police, the ASIO, Australian Intelligence Community, and that gives them more of a power to use some of those federal agencies, which is why they can't use the full force of the JCTP until it's deemed a terrorist incident. So, for example, again, going back to the horrific incident in Bondi, no federal agency was involved in any of that because they didn't or wouldn't call it a terrorist incident. So there's a clear distinction why the chief or the commissioner of police made that call when she did. It enacts, you know, we're part of the National Counterterrorism Plan, and there's certain legalities that are followed.
Good explanation. Great analysis. Good to have you on the program, Shane. Thank you.
Anytime, Chris.
All the best. Good on you. Shane Healy, terrorism expert, just unpacking what we saw last night. In so many ways, it's a ghastly incident or set of incidents. And I just hope police carry out exactly what they have told us they will do, and we will keep them accountable. Let's take a break. A news update, and then Mark Latham on the other side, right here at TNT.
Today's News Talk Radio.
We do have some big news.
What is it?
Yeah, what is it?
What is it?
Now, TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. The Israeli military has provided the government with various response options following recent Iranian airstrikes, according to IDF spokesperson Peter Lerner. In Sydney's western suburb of Wakeley, a bishop and three worshippers were stabbed during a service at Christ the Good Shepherd Church, triggering significant unrest. European Union lawmakers have officially approved a new immigration system designed to manage illegal immigration more effectively after several years of negotiation.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's News Talk. This is TNT Radio.
And it is so good to have your company. Let's get to a man who doesn't pull any punches. He's an independent MP in the New South Wales Parliament upper house. It's Mark Latham, MLC. Mark, welcome back to TNT.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
You've spent all of your life in the southwestern region of Sydney. You know the suburb of Wakeley well. You also have an accurate understanding of the good and bad aspects of multiculturalism in that part of Sydney. This chaos last night has highlighted for me some old habits, some primitive aspects of immigrant behaviour that kind of dies hard and crosses generations. In many ways, it's a disgrace, isn't it?
Well, we're hearing a lot of talk today about multiculturalism and cohesion, but these are the same politicians who basically allowed problems to fester, not specifically what happened last night. We'll find out more about that in coming days, but the fact that an Assyrian Orthodox priest was attacked in a church in Fairfield does tell us something, that there was no cohesion there. It was an act of barbarism, an act of attacking religious practice and freedom, an act of terrorism. So what's gone wrong in Fairfield? Well, for many, many years, I suppose two things. One, it's become a dumping ground for newly arrived migrants and refugees in particular without a lot of follow-up government attention and support. And the second thing is that you've got communities there that don't speak English. Now, you can't have social cohesion unless people can talk to each other. Like, unless you can speak to each other in a common language, and in Australia that's English, it's very hard to build the habits of cooperation and trust, get to know each other, build a thing that we call community. So that's been a long-standing problem now in Fairfield. I highlighted it on social media and other places about 5 or 6 years ago. Chris Bowen, who's a federal member of parliament, said, oh, no, this is all wrong. We do something about English language skills. Well, you've got to make those skills almost mandatory. You've got to ensure that people receiving welfare in particular make the effort to learn English and can speak to others from a different religious and ethnic background and build those habits of cooperation and trust. So you're getting a lot of lip service from politicians today, but they're the ones who failed Fairfield on those two important fronts.
That's a really good point. The last time I was in Fairfield Post Office, there were as many Iraqi-speaking queue lines as there were English-speaking queue lines, and I just shook my head. And I thought to myself, if you can't communicate in the language of the country that you choose to go to, how are you ever supposed to change your mind about the hatreds that you left behind?
Well, that's a really good point. We want migrants to come here, and if they come from the Middle East, to leave all those hatreds and religious tensions and problems behind. But they won't do that if they've only got a language of the Middle East and speak to other people from the Middle East and perhaps get some encouragement that those hatreds and problems are relevant here in Australia. So the best way of leaving it behind is to speak English, obviously to get a job, to get out there and realise all the opportunities you have in our wonderful country and understand that, yes, cohesion and cooperation and peaceful activity, making some money, looking after your family, having a job, setting up a business, they're all much better than the sort of hatreds and fights and wars and trouble and killings that we see in the Middle East. So, you know, this is a part of the issue. The very first step for a better society in a place like Fairfield is everyone being able to communicate with each other in a common language. And if you're receiving welfare, and in fact there should be a language test in coming here, we shouldn't be bringing people here who've got no chance of speaking English. Receiving welfare, and in fact there should be a language test in coming here, we shouldn't be bringing people here who've got no chance of speaking English into the future. They come here without English, they haven't got the services, the encouragement or the mandatory provisions in place to make sure that English is their first language in the future. So, you know, these problems will continue, perhaps not as dramatic and sinful as what we saw there last night. But the problems of Fairfield have been lingering for a long while. It's been a safe Labor voting area until the people there quite wisely decided they didn't want Christina Keneally as their local Member of Parliament in the seat of Fowler. So it doesn't get a lot of attention in the media and doesn't get a lot of attention in the political groups. But you grew up there, Chris, you know it well. You're an exception to that rule. In the media, but all you'll find 9 out of 10 of the people gathering there today with their cameras or politicians talking about it know very little about the problems they've allowed to fester in Fairfield over 10 or 20 years.
Yeah, very, very intelligent comments. And I don't think it's any surprise or just coincidence that the dysfunction that exists in the Fairfield district is underneath the control, I guess, of a federal member like Chris Bowen, who's a complete and utter dunderhead. No wonder he can't get the people in his own electorate to speak English.
Well, he's taken the area for granted. He hasn't been a strong supporter of religious freedom. We've also got to acknowledge, in light of the attack on Assyrian Bishop Emmanuel there last night, that this comes off the back of, 10, 15 years of left-wing sneering and criticism of Christianity in Australia. That doesn't help.
Yeah.
And it's been defined as an act of terror, so you understand that the young man, the 16-year-old, his motivation must have been religious, and he's probably from an Islamic background. We'll find out more about that. But none of the left-wing sneering about Christianity has been at all helpful, because it does build in the minds of young and old people that, well, there's something wrong with Christianity. Maybe they'll do something about it. Maybe this young man was influenced by the media coverage he saw about the Bondi knifing, that tragedy. So off the back of these two events in Sydney, it feels so un-Australian, so abnormal, that this would be happening in our society. But all these things have a reason behind them, and unfortunately, they haven't been addressed by government.
Yeah, I'm glad we've got you on today, because you two have such great insight into that particular area of Sydney and the cultures that often clash, and the problems that have allowed that to occur. And what the hell, can you just explain to me why the federal member for Fowler, Di Lee, who I've got a lot of respect for, would start to say today that, oh, police shouldn't have described it as an act of terror? Does she not know the words Allah Akbar?
Well, it's a very foolish comment by Di Lee. We're all very happy for her to beat Christina Keneally at the last federal election. She's an independent who in the past has had some Liberal Party associations, and she looked like she was doing a good job. But she's completely foolish if she thinks not mentioning terrorism somehow makes terrorism go away. I mean, that's basically her proposition. We shouldn't be saying it's terrorism, she hopes, because she's worried about people being fearful and what might happen in the future. Well, Di Lee, avoiding the obvious and the police finding that it's terrorism, I'm afraid, is not going to make your community safer into the future. These problems have got to be confronted head on. That's the job of the two local members, Di Lee and Chris Bowen, and they should get on with the things I've been talking about today and solve these problems, instead of entering the fantasy world of a word game where you pretend that the obvious isn't actually true.
Yeah. Stop cancelling the truth and call it as it is, and give the police the powers that they need to get to the bottom of it. Bizarre comments. Now, to the Bondi Junction stabbing massacre, Mark, what are your observations after we've had so much coverage of that particular series of events?
Well, a terrible, terrible thing. Again, something that you don't expect to see in a place like Bondi Junction in Sydney, in a shopping mall. But, you know, I mentioned earlier all these tragedies. There are reasons behind them. They just don't come out of the blue. And for those of us who've thought 45 years ago the Richmond report in New South Wales was an act of folly, where they basically said we're closing down all the mental asylums and people with severe mental health problems, schizophrenia and the like, can be normalised into the community. Well, Chris, inevitably something like this was going to happen. The guy had mental health problems to the point where he's taken a knife, and it said that because he didn't have a girlfriend, he thought he'd kill some females, including a knife attack on a baby. Now, that's as sick and disturbed as you can get in our society, and you've got to ask, why was he out on the streets? And as someone who gets around Western Sydney, all parts of Sydney, and as a representative in New South Wales, it is disturbing when you see people on the trains and elsewhere on the streets talking to themselves, yelling out schizophrenic-type thoughts and menacing behaviour. Like, you know, there are people on the streets very clearly in our observation who shouldn't be there. And this guy at Bondi, the killer, was obviously one of them. So I see the mental health minister in New South Wales, Rose Jackson, saying, oh, we need more long-term accommodation for these people so they're not homeless. Well, perhaps the long-term accommodation is get the severe cases back into asylums where they're under observation, their problems are being addressed by the best health experts, and most importantly, they're no longer a risk and a menace to innocent people in our streets, in our shopping centres.
I couldn't agree more. I had this conversation this very day with a family member who raised the Richmond Report from 1980 and saying that this is part of the cause. And you have nailed it again today. You're right. Do we give women pepper spray, Mark? This seems to be the big talking point in the last 24 hours. I think it's worth talking about.
Give it to them. What's the law stopping them having a spray to defend themselves now? Isn't this part of the whole rights of female agenda that's been around? Is there something stopping a woman from using a spray to defend herself?
I don't know.
I'm unaware of any such law. Maybe there is a law saying you can't access that, but I would have thought if people feel in their circumstances, they might be domestic, they might be out on the streets, they might be particular to a certain community. If it's a woman, indeed a man, who feels threatened when they walk on the street, a pepper spray is a pretty good way to defend yourself, and certainly by what we saw, it could have saved some lives at Bondi Junction. So, yeah, I'm in favour of that.
Yeah. Me too. What about giving security guards weapons? I think that might go a bit too far. The association says today, when you're in the situation as they were at Bondi Junction, you can't do much with a radio and a torch.
No, you can't. A radio and a torch weren't going to help much against the guy wielding that knife. It's interesting, the security guards, because, you know, obviously, to some extent, we take them for granted. They're in shopping centres, they're around nightclubs, they're in the centre of the city. You do see them around. There's no great training or certification system in place for them. But my view would be we underutilise retired police officers. Not every retired police officer is age 60 and above. There's a lot of younger police officers getting out of the service. They've been trained properly in how to use a weapon, and they've been qualified. So if they take up work as a security officer, I've got no problem with them having a weapon, which, you know, again, obviously in the circumstances of Bondi Junction would have saved lives. So if they're individuals who can be attested to have the training, the qualifications and the past experience with a weapon in the police service or indeed the military, and then they work as security officers, I've got no problem with that. But I certainly don't agree that someone just coming in afresh without the training and qualifications and experience could just be having a weapon in a shopping centre.
One last one just on Bondi, and it's a lighter issue, but I see that very brave bloke, the Bollard Man as he's called, who stood at the top of the escalator challenging the attacker, we've all seen the video, he's a Frenchman, his visa's about to run out, and the Prime Minister has said today he can stay for as long as he wants.
Well, I don't mind that. I mean, he's shown the sort of courage and determination, grit, that we want in Australia, doesn't he? If he wants to stay, maybe out of the experience, he wants to go home, because it would have been terrifying for him. But I've got no problem with him staying in our country. And I just want to make the point about that man that, you know, men in general in this debate, in politics, we hear about masculine toxicity and toxic masculine behaviour and the like, that men are demonised. Well, generally, a good man is very much a protector of women, his partner, his children, friends, those around him. And that Frenchman just showed what a credit and a good thing a man can do in those circumstances where, you know, he put his own safety on the line to try and do something about the menacing animal who was killing people. So good on him. And if he's staying in Australia, I hope he does. And, you know, I hope he gets over the trauma of what he's experienced and has a good life here as he deserves.
Good on him. Yeah, some gutsy behaviour by many, many individuals on Saturday afternoon, which is a small consolation, but a consolation nonetheless. I do want to talk about Brad Baducci's appearance at a Senate inquiry, but I need a break, Mark. Let's do that right away here at TNT.
My name's Stacey. I'm 57, and I was adopted in 2020.
We were adopted in 2019.
And we were adopted in 2021.
We had a house. And it sounds crazy, but it wasn't a home. The one thing that Jake and Emma brought is it became a home.
When I met Dakota, he had just turned 14.
You weren't there for the first this and the first that. I missed the first words, but we got a lot of other firsts.
Watching her say, oh my God, I cannot believe I got my license. And she's like, I passed. And I'm like, girl.
See them grow. It is...
They chose to love us. They didn't have to. They chose us. Family.
You and you.
Kids in the middle.
What I thought was a complete life was nowhere near complete, but it is now.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org.
My dad was a farmer. The guy was bigger than life. He wasn't someone that liked to show his emotion or liked to show when he was struggling. But we all struggle. I want to show emotion to my kids. It's something that brings me so much joy. And I want them to see me working through things. Allow your kids to know that it's okay to struggle, that even dad doesn't know the answer sometimes, but we're going to figure it out together.
Thanks for listening and being a part of the Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, I've got Mark Latham with me, independent MP in the New South Wales Upper House. The outgoing Woolies boss, Brad Baducci, I bet he wasn't looking forward to this, and he won't be looking back on it this afternoon with any fondness. He was savaged today at a Senate inquiry into supermarket practices. Green Senator Nick McKim, he was fired up. He even threatened Baducci with jail time for avoiding answering certain questions. It was a very lively event. Have a listen to this.
Do you know what the average ROE for banks in Australia is? It's less than half of yours. It's about 10%. We have rapacious banks in this country, either the most profitable banks in the world or close to the most profitable banks in the world, and you are making 2.5 times their return on investment. What have you got to say to that?
Senator, you just quoted return on investment, and I'm talking
on return on equity.
And our return on investment is 10% post-tax. Our EBIT margin, which our net profit after tax, which we talked to, is 2.5 cents in a dollar spent at Woolworths Group.
I understand the figures you want to talk about.
It's just over 3% right now for the incredibly important 350,000 retail investors that hold our shares. Indeed, at the moment, it is lower return on dividend than you might get for money in the bank.
I tell you what, Mark, I don't mind it when there's a bit of heat under the bums of some of these CEOs associated with the supermarkets.
Yeah, I think that public accountability and exposure is good. McKim is a Green senator from Tasmania. There's some things that Greens do that probably need jailing, but he was fired up and said, if you don't answer the questions, you're in contempt of the parliament, and that's a criminal offence. It's just bluster. It would never happen, of course. But Baducci, at least to his credit, said that Woolworths would accept the mandatory code of conduct for the big grocery firms, and that involves big fines if you breach that code of conduct. So that sounded a positive thing, but otherwise he was ducking and weaving a fair bit. But it's long overdue that the head of Woolworths and the head of Coles faced the senators and were grilled about some of their bad practices.
If you really look into it, and you're the one with the economic background, the real problem with prices when it comes to supermarket shopping is because we don't have enough competition, right?
Yeah, competition is important. It's been a duopoly, basically, what economists call a duopoly. The big two, Coles and Woolworths, Aldi, and a few other miners have played a role in some locations in providing a bit more competition, and that's healthy. But, you know, in a place like Tasmania, where that Green Senator comes from, it's really just Woolworths and Coles. So you get away from the major cities, you've got the duopoly. So that's a problem. It's very hard to break because you wouldn't make a lot of money coming into the market given the predatory pricing of the big two. They'll drop their prices just to make it hard for a third entry to the industry. And the problem overall with the big two is that the prices go up very quickly, then they're very slow to come down, even though a price fall is warranted. So I think that's where you need this mandatory code of conduct and price monitoring of the big supermarket duo, so that if the prices don't come down quickly when they're warranted and there isn't a decent return to the farm sector in particular, they can be put on notice, they can be fined, you can use the big stick, which is long overdue.
Yeah, I think you're right. The Bruce Learman defamation case, I tell you what, talk about a wreckage. Everyone's been wrecked in some way, certainly their reputations. Learman is facing a massive legal bill after failing in his defamation case against Channel 10 and one of their hosts, Lisa Wilkinson. I noticed that a short time ago, Mark, the ACT Chief Minister has mentioned the possibility of a second trial to determine whether Learman did indeed rape Brittany Higgins and saying that it is possible. The saga is endless, isn't it?
Yeah, endless and complicated. If you can follow this, you're doing well in all the detail that's been out there in the public arena. But I suppose the bottom line for Bruce Lerman, it's the biggest own goal since that soccer player Escobar, isn't it? That Lerman was, you know, apparently badly treated in the criminal justice system in the ACT. He seemed to have good cause to sue the ACT government and get some money on that basis, but he decided to go into the defamation caper to get even more money, and it's backfired such that Justice Michael Lee of the federal court has found under civil standards, which are you know, a lot weaker than a criminal court, that that he raped Brittany Higgins. Now, I don't know how anyone, you know, maybe the judge has got extra powers compared to the rest of us, but if you weren't there and it's he said, she said, it's very hard to make any finding, even at the weakest civil standard of proof. Because, well, but to backtrack, I will say one positive, very positive thing about Justice Lee. He's called out the fabrication, that the parties at different levels were pretending they weren't back at federal parliament at 2 o'clock on a Saturday morning for anything other than romantic intent and, you know, after a big night on the drink. So there's no one at 2 a.m. on a Saturday morning in federal parliament who's writing speeches or studying press releases, that Lerman and Higgins were there, and it said that Lerman was the instigator to get back there and have some hanky-panky. Now, what's happened in the privacy of the minister's office, where there's no security cameras and you really only got the evidence of Lerman and Brittany Higgins, well, one of two things has happened, that he has raped her, or she's passed out drunk on the couch and Michael Lee has spoken about how much alcohol Brittany Higgins had. And Lerman, he's getting phone calls from his girlfriend who was elsewhere in Canberra, has decided, well, not much fun in what's in front of me, I'm going home. So one of those two things.
Or they've had consensual sex, Mark.
Sorry?
Or they've had consensual sex.
Or, well, there's that third option, but given that, you know, she's heavily affected by alcohol, that seems the least likely of the three scenarios. But anyway, Michael Lee has got powers of understanding and perception the rest of us lack in that circumstance, where it's very hard to make a definitive finding about what's happened. But for Lerman, it's a complete disaster because he's going to have to pay costs. He's now got the tag of rapist on him for the rest of his career. He's a relatively young man. He'll never really get a decent job in the future, and he might have to leave the country, as Brittany Higgins has. So the wrecking ball is absolute, and no one comes out of it with any credit. You know, the media has criticised, Senator Reynolds has copped it, Brittany Higgins has copped it, and now Lerman is worse off of the lot. So it's a complete wrecking ball, and it's hard to believe from one night in Parliament House this is the consequence 5 or 6 years later.
It is astonishing. One last one before we let you go. Just on the Middle East, let's get overseas for a second. Somehow the Americans have managed to keep Israel calm after the phony missile and drone attack by Iran, which was very easily extinguished by the Israelis. Iran is threatening using a nuclear bomb if Israel counterattacks. I just want to remind viewers, if I may, what Joe Biden, who was the then vice president, said about Donald Trump when Donald was president, about the Middle East. And have a listen to Joe a few years back.
The world has changed because of what Trump has done. And the American people, including independents and some Republicans, know how bad he is, know how much he's misrepresented, know how he's getting close to getting us in a war. I said, as the walls close in on this man, I'm worried he's going to get us to war in Iran. Unfortunately, I may have been right. The fact of the matter is, there's a lot at stake in this election.
All of a sudden, Joe is on the precipice of getting the world to war with Iran. Isn't that funny?
Well, there's a big lesson here. Don't give rogue, radical, extremist administrations money, thinking you can buy them off and find peace. You know, this goes back to the Obama administration, where Biden was vice president. Billions of dollars were given to Iran. The European Union, the UK, did the same, thinking that somehow you could pacify this rogue regime. They'll always hate Israel. They'll always want to obliterate Israel. They launched the attack a few nights ago of many hundreds of missiles. Only 1% of them got through, a great credit to what they call the Iron Dome anti-missile air defences of Israel, much needed. And Israel really has got reason to retaliate because Iran effectively declared war on Israel. So, you know, Biden looks like a fool for being part of that Obama scam. And the lesson is stand up to bad regimes and don't give them money under any circumstances, because in this case, it's just encouraged them to do their worst.
Yeah, that is the lesson. He's made to look like a complete egg, given what's now transpiring involving Iran. Mate, thank you very much for all of that. I appreciate it. And we'll catch up again next week.
Look forward to it. Thanks, Chris.
Good on you. That's Mark Latham, MLC, independent MP in the New South Wales Parliament upper house. Good to get his take on it. And the reason why it was terrific to have him on today, because we're talking about the unravelling of multiculturalism in southwestern Sydney. That is his patch. He was mayor of Liverpool in southwestern Sydney. He has spent his political career representing seats in that area. He understands why things have got out of control and things have not been assisted by politicians who don't understand the importance of having everyone speak English and therefore to be able to communicate and assimilate better. There has been very little assimilation in that part of Western Sydney, and I should know, I grew up there. I've got to take a break. That is a news break for you. And then after the news breaks, stack to get onto, we'll talk to Di McDonald about the possibility of giving women pepper spray and some other issues too, including China. What is China up to at the moment? Andrew Phelan will explain. This is TNT.